Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Happy opening day, Kansas City. Thursday, March 28th, 2024. Let's talk to Buster Olney from ESPN about opening day. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. Fired up, just like you guys are. You know, it's here. Like, there's so much hope in the air for so many teams. I'm hearing down in Texas, we've got the Cubs, the defending champion Rangers on television tonight, but I know you guys are going to be locked in on the Royals today playing the Twins.
For the first time in, let's see, 35 years, I'm not playing rotisserie baseball, which infuriates me, but you had a fantasy baseball draft you took part in with your son, is that right?
I did. We had the second overall pick in one of those ESPN leagues, and so we were going back and forth on it, and we both agreed. We took Bobby Witt at the number two spot.
Why, you son of a gun. Who went number one?
Yep. I'm assuming it was Ronald Acuna Jr. Yeah. My son's in college at Hofstra, and so he was in his dorm room, and he goes, "We're up. We're the number two pick." And then as we're going, we hit about round six. And I was like, Cole Reagans, we got to look for a spot to take Cole Reagans. And I think we wound up taking him as like the one, he's projected, I think, by ESPN to be like player number 146, something in that range, maybe 136. And we got him in the 90 to 100 range. We wanted to jump that. But he was on our board very early. They were looking for an opportunity to get him. So we got two Royals, important parts of our team.
So we were looking, shockingly, Jake was looking at some different betting props going into the MLB season. I know that everyone is really taken aback by that. Because we played a clip earlier, John Morosi was on MLB Network, and his pick for AL Cy Young Award winner is Cole Reagans. And I'll be honest with you, a month ago, it was too much hype. I needed to settle down, so I've tried to scale it back. But then he was named opening day starter, and it started all over again, right? And so we were looking at odds. It went from plus 1,800, now it's plus 900.
Correct.
For him to win the Cy Young. And then we looked at Bobby Witt Jr. There's only five players ahead of him as far as the odds to win AL MVP.
Yep.
And now Otani's out of the league. Maybe literally at some point, who knows. But he's out of the American League, so that kind of opens things up. But just the idea, and I'm not asking if either one are going to, you know, win that award, but just the idea that a Royals fan right now with a straight face can say going into opening day, yeah, we've got a legitimate MVP caliber contender on our team, and we've got a legitimate Cy Young contender if he pitches the way he did last year. I mean, that's not crazy to say, right?
No. As you were talking, I was thinking back to when it was at the end of last April when you and I were talking about, okay, it looks like it's not happening this year. Start thinking about moving some of these guys because you might get some return. We talked about how Rolas Chapman wasn't a guy that was necessarily going to get you the number one prospect in some of their organization. You know, relief pitchers, you're not going to get that kind of return. But maybe you can get a useful piece, right? Well, guess what?
Pretty good, huh?
It's pretty good that, you know, what a great job by JJ and his staff to get a guy who, you know, that quote from the staff member resonates with me from Jeff Passan's story about him, you know, a left-handed Jacob deGrom. You know, to see that sort of velocity increase, to see him put together, they've got he's a legitimate conversation piece for the Cy Young, which I think really opened up in a big way once Gerrit Cole got hurt. Because Gerrit Cole was far and away, in the eyes of a lot of people, the best pitcher on the planet. But now he's going to be out indefinitely. And guess what? That opens it up for someone like Cole Reagans to step in and maybe compete for the Cy Young Award.
And the other thing, too, is Bobby Witt Jr., not only is he an MVP-caliber player, now Royals fans don't have to, you know, qualify everything.
Yes.
But I don't know how long he's going to be here. You know what? They're going to have to start looking to trade him. Now, not only he's an MVP candidate, he's our MVP candidate, and there's no argument about that, right?
No, and you can feel good about building around him going forward. Look, some of the guys that they added for this year's team, veterans, they may be one-offs. You know, bring them in for 1 year, and if it's not going great, Maybe they trade him at the deadline this year. But Bobby Witt Jr. is there to stay. He's committed to the organization. The organization committed to him. And you have an anchor. You know, you have a guy who at some point, you know, who knows? Maybe they're going to be able to build a statue for him at some point outside the ballpark. And that can only happen with the team stepping up and paying him big money. And by the way, a lot more expensive for them to sign him this offseason than, say, two offseasons ago. So tip of the cap to the Royals ownership to make that happen, because I do think that changes the perception of the team in terms of what's possible.
So, Buster, as I look at this team, you know, you mentioned the fact that they brought in some almost like rental players, like you said, one-off type guys. There's two players that have been part of the organization where, like, last year they took the year to evaluate players, and they cut bait on a lot of them. The evaluation was, you're not part of the future, you're not part of the future, and now we're going forward. But two guys that I feel like are still very much like their potential development this year could really swing whether this is a good season or bad season. On the mound is Brady Singer, and in the field is MJ Melendez. Guys who have had their ups and downs so far, if they could find a way to make it click and be good for the whole year, it really changes the lineup and the rotation. How important are those guys as you see it, and how much hope can we or should we still have that those guys can find it consistently as big leaguers?
Yeah, I agree with your casting of that. Like, I think that's kind of where we are with both guys. And it was interesting the other day to read about how the Royals have been teaching Brady Singer a sweeper, right? Another weapon that he can use and maybe deploy against opposing hitters, and something that for a lot of pitchers has been difference-making, you know, that particular pitch. So that, you know, that for me is something to watch early in the year. And with Melendez, I do think it's at a crossroads, and he needs his support, or they're going to have to look someplace.
Why do you ask questions that make people hang up? Why can't you be cool, man? We need Buster on opening day.
I'm coming strong out of the box, as they say.
Oh, wow.
So,
unbelievable terminology you just used there. But
batter's box, it's baseball.
Sure. I did have a follow-up for Buster. We're going to really dig into the expectations and the race in the Central, but of course you...
He was about to say some stuff about MJ Melendez that I'm very interested to hear. I think that's such a big key to whether or not this is going to be a good season. The way he finished the year last year, we've gone down that road before, though, right, with guys where it's like, oh, the guy had a great September. Maybe he can build on it, but if MJ Melendez can take what he did toward the end of last season, last couple months of the year, and go forward, he's got to be an offensive producer, right? He is not a plus defender anywhere that you put him on the field. He's got to produce at the plate. He's got that potential. When he's clicking, he hits for power. He's a run production bat, but so far most of his career he hasn't been. So I was curious to hear what Buster was going to say about MJ.
All right, Buster, we lost you before. You could comment on MJ Melendez, as Nate Bucchetti asked you about him.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, he has been viewed as a guy with, you know, great offensive potential by folks with other teams, but at some point it's got to translate. Mm-hmm. At some point is they, you know, they've now reached the, you know, you get a get out of jail free card stage, and you get the whole season, and you get 600 at bats. To now, guess what? With everything on the line, with the money they paid for Bobby Witt Jr., with the potential of a, you know, a Cole Reagans, with the money they spent on the free agents, they're going to need a return on investment this year, and so we'll see.
Buster, I'm going to tell you that another guy that I think is going to have a breakout year, and I know the Royals love him, and he's going to be hitting leadoff and playing third base, is Michael Garcia. And this is the guy who put up huge numbers in the offseason of Venezuela, you know, followed it up with a strong spring. I know that the spring training numbers don't matter, but you'd rather see guys succeed than not. Hard hit percentage, excellent defense at third base. There's so many numbers there that point to him having a breakout year. And I know that J.J. Piccolo and the Royals, you know, consider him and Bobby Witt and Vinny Pasquantino and Cole Reagans as the nucleus that they're not getting traded. When we talk to other teams, we don't talk about them. That's the nucleus we believe in that we're going to build around that are going to be here. And we've already talked about Reagans. We've already talked about Witt. And so let's talk about Michael Garcia and the return of Vinny Pasquantino, because that's huge. He extends that lineup. He's a guy that will take a walk. He sees a lot of pitches. He'll be in that third spot behind Bobby Witt. So now you got Michael Garcia leading off, Bobby Witt Jr. Second, and Vinny Pasquantino hitting third. Three building blocks and young stars for this team that could hopefully be very successful for years to come for the Royals.
Yeah, and I've heard about Garcia from folks with other teams. You know, I remember talking to one executive of another team who said that, yeah, we asked the Royals about him and they dismissed us.
Right.
Like it was like, yeah, there's no chance they're going to trade him. You know, and I'm excited for Vinny because last year must have been so frustrating, you know, to follow him on social media and just have him have to watch all of this play out and to miss the opportunity to grow. And, you know, he clearly is someone who has embraced Kansas City. He's embraced the market. He's dying to play. You can just feel that. And, you know, I know that they looked at him as being a potential leader as he's coming up through the minor league. And you're right in the way that, you know, you talked about him as a hitter. You know, he's someone I think that can make everybody else better. And it will be interesting as time goes on because he will take a walk. You know, will he stay in that spot in the lineup, or will he move to a different spot in the lineup at some point? You know, will they shift things around? I'm hyped about the Royals. The other day, you know, we did a preview. We had Joe Goldberg on the show, and we talked about, you know, what the expectations are. And it was interesting that the Pacoda projections, which I'm sure you guys have seen, I think we're at like 71.4. Sarah Langs, one of our folks in the podcast, she had him at 72. Paul Embiid's had him at 71. I had him at 79.
You son of a gun.
I think they're going to have a big step forward this year. And I, you know, don't think they're going to make the playoffs. They don't think they're going to win the division. But I do think this is a year where you're going to see some growth. And, you know, let's be honest here. The fact that they're in the American League Central allows for that a little bit more than it would in some other divisions. But you can only beat the people you play, and I think they're going to be better in playing other teams that they were last year significantly.
All right, Buster, again, today it's the Royals and the Twins. 3:10 first pitch out at Kauffman Stadium, and it's a very exciting pitching matchup with Cole Reagans for the Royals and the Twins with Pablo Lopez, who is another Cy Young contender. And I looked at you tweeted out yesterday, you know, ESPN's MLB predictions, the playoffs, World Series, MVPs, and other things. And I'm looking at the AL Central, and out of 22, I think it was, or more votes, the Twins got 16 votes. The Tigers got 5 votes. Cleveland got 3 votes, and the Royals got 2. So 26 votes, and the Twins got 16 to win it. It mentions that the Twins have the clearest path to a division title at ESPN Bet. Minnesota is the only AL club listed as an odds-on favorite to win its division at -115. So, in your opinion, how much separation is there between the Twins and the Tigers, Guardians, and Royals?
Not much. You know, I look at the Twins as being a team, and I pick them to win the division. You know, and it, just being around that camp, I think they're, first off, Royce Lewis is clearly going to a stage in his career if he stays on the field, because he's had these series of injuries that are unrelated early in his career. If he stays on the field for 150 games, he's going to be an all-star. He's going to be a high-impact guy. He and Correa and Buxton, you know, keeping him on the field is going to be their big challenge. But I think they're the best team in the division, and yet I think they're probably going to, you know, win the division with something in the range of 88 wins. I don't look at them as being like a 92-win team. You know, Sonny Gray is gone. I think the Tigers are going to take a step forward with their young players. They have a lot of, you know, capability. In fact, when, you know, we did the TV version of the podcast yesterday, Jeff Passan was on there with us, and I asked everybody for a bold prediction, and he said he's got the Tigers winning the division.
Ooh.
The Guardians always have great pitching. but it's just shocking how little power they have. You know, they're like a college basketball team that doesn't shoot for threes. Pretty tough to exist, you know, and be competitive consistently when you just don't hit home runs. So I think there's opportunity there for the Royals within the division, and it's part of the reason why I projected them to take a big step forward.
Buster, before we wrap things up, I've got to ask any thoughts on Ohtani's situation and how things have developed over the past week.
Yeah, so many unanswered questions. You know, even since last week, when he spoke for 10 minutes the other day, I'm sitting there going, he's not answering this question. He's not answering this question. He's not answering this question. First off, you know, the question of why did the story change so dramatically from one day to the next, where one day it was Ohtani was trying to help a friend and paid off his gambling debts to the next day that he had no knowledge. Why is it that Major League Baseball, according to Ohtani's timeline, why is it that Major League Baseball and his representatives had awareness of the situation, according to Ohtani, 2 or 3 days before he did? That makes absolutely no sense. We still are waiting for confirmation that his lawyers, who put out that statement last week accusing Ibe Mitsuhara, the interpreter, of quote-unquote massive thefts, we still don't have confirmation that they've actually filed some sort of a complaint or information with a specific body, you know, an investigative authority. So if that hasn't happened, then why hasn't that happened? And I always go back to this. How is it that a guy whose first salary as Ohtani's interpreter was $85,000, went up to $300,000, how is it that that person's racking up millions and millions of dollars in gambling debts? That all makes no sense to me. I think Major League Baseball is an absolute obligation to dive into this, to get answers. It's not only, you know, in theory, trying to get to the truth, but I think they have an obligation to the other players, and they should hold Ohtani to the same standards they do all other players and find out exactly what happened. I have my theories about what happened, but I don't really know. Only two guys do, and they have to get in there, investigate, and put the, you know, the light of day on it.
Buster, I consider you a friend. Should I be concerned that Jake has started to introduce himself to people as my interpreter and ask for my checkbook? Is there anything that I need to follow up on there?
Well, I'm gonna give you some advice here. Don't give him your bank information.
Right, that's okay? Right. Well, too late. Okay, you said 79 wins for the Royals. Who's in the World Series, Buster? Look into your crystal ball, please.
I've got the Phillies beating the Texas Rangers in the World Series. My son, who's a Braves fan, was beyond thrilled that I picked the Phillies to win the World Series rather than his Braves, because he thinks that all my picks turn out to be crap. You know, last year I picked the San Diego Padres to win the World Series. So when I told him I was picking the Phillies, he was thrilled. Look, I think that team has a ton of focus and potential, you know, energy, and with a lot of great players coming off of last year's disappointment. They were the best team in the middle of October, and they got knocked out. And the Rangers, I think, are going to get back to the World Series in part because of this absolute ridiculous rookie, Wyatt Langford, who's going to make his Major League debut on our air tonight.
Mm.
He's the number 4 overall pick. He is not at any level since he became a professional, had an OPS under 1,100. He hit like 360 this spring with an OPS of 1,137. And you talk to the other Rangers players about him, they are in awe of his talent. Bruce Bochy, you know, in my conversation with him the other day, compared him mentally to Buster Posey, and that very steady makeup. I think this guy is going to be a star right from the get-go. And it's too bad that the Orioles don't have Jackson Holliday in the big leagues to start the year, because that probably will put Jackson at a disadvantage in winning Rookie of the Year. Good old service time manipulation.
There it is. Hey, Buster, happy opening day. Thank you so much for the time, and we look forward to talking baseball with you all season long.
That sounds great. See you guys.
That's Buster Olney. Boy, there was a lot of info there.
Mm. Took a lot of notes on that one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That'll believe me.
Well, it's right here. You can see it.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Darren Revelle's tweeting out different ballpark foods that are available in different spots. At Mets games, the Mets championship burger. Anyway. a dry-aged beef patty. Maine lobster seafood salad.
Yes, please.
Lobster fondue. Charred lemon. on a brioche bun?
Boy, there's a lot there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Right?
I love lobster.
Now, sometimes I see stuff like, this is not something, you know, they're trying too hard. No.
That looks delicious.
I want this. Yeah. Lobsters?
Lobsters.
Lobsters and balloons? Slapped this off the table. They give it to me. I slapped it right off the table. You like lobsters? You like balloons?
Your hands are going to get really messy eating that thing.
So?
I don't care.
I'll lick them.
Yeah, it's like you with the chocolate donuts here in the morning, just sitting there licking on your fingers. What's wrong with that?
Right.
Oh, that didn't look good to you? You know, this is decadent.
Mm. I'm going to make myself.
Flare up his gout, though.
Right.
Flare up the gout. Jake, flare up the gout.
You're the one that's so picky.
Hell,
this is,
yes.
Yeah, right? Okay.
I saw that.
I was
waiting for Diego. That's poison.
Yeah, do you know that
preservatives on
wild
that
caught, you know?
It absolutely is.
There's mercury in that, actually.
It's absolutely wild caught. I have no idea, but I'm going to say it is.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
I'm making myself. I've got a couple of the helmets that I saved from getting helmet notches at the stadium, so I'm going to be making myself my own helmet notches.
Oh, look at you.
Today as I sit down and watch this game somehow.
By the way, request, I will be up in the wonderful town of Smithville for a track meet today. Smithville High School. Will you have concessions?
Oh, boy.
And will they include hot dogs? Come on.
Got to have some nachos.
I just need a hot dog.
You need nachos.
I need a hot dog.
With peppers.
I'll settle for a hot dog. I'm not going to make me wild demands.
I'm telling you, Smithville, if you're worth a damn, you got to have some nachos with peppers.
It was one of the best hot dogs I ever had.
Right. I will. I'll walk around that track. It was one of the best hot dogs I ever had. I'll tell everyone.
It was one of the best hot dogs I ever had.
Describe the burst of juices.
Right. It's opening day. I don't care where I at.
Right.
I want a hot dog. Hey, Summits. 7:30.
Just plug it in, set the timer, and you have perfect hot dogs in minutes. Holy sausages come out with the taste you always wanted.
You care about us, Kansas City? Bring us hot dogs before 10 a.m. I'll make it worth your while. Not really, but I'll try. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
When I took the first initial bite, there was a great big pop, and then a burst of juices rushed into my mouth, and it was delicious.
Deion Sanders knows how to make a good hot dog right here.
The best. It was great.
It was one of the best hot dogs I ever had.
Welcome back to the show. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Happy opening day, Thursday, March 28, 2024. It's time to talk to our great friend, Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Not only is it opening day, but it's Sweet 16. What a great day in sports. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am well, Stephen. How are you?
Awesome. Glad to talk to you about some really nice matchups in the Sweet 16. High caliber, high quality matchups that we're looking forward to. But let's start with the late game, because that's the game that I am most excited to watch tonight. And after going through the Big 12 tournament and working the stage at FanFest, I felt like I was in Ames, Iowa for 3 days. And so that momentum has carried over. And I can't wait now to watch Illinois and Iowa State. And I think it's the best matchup, or at least for me, to watch of the Sweet 16. What do you think of these two teams? KenPom's number one ranked offense against the number one ranked defense. This should be a good one, tipping off at 9:09 Central tonight.
It does make it very interesting to see how that dichotomy there will work itself out. The number one offense, which is, by the way, fueled by a team that should be a great defensive team, but is not. And that's I've talked about that a lot on Big Ten Network over the last 6 weeks or so, that it just doesn't add up that these guys aren't great defensively, but they're not. They have been at moments significant defensively, Illinois has. But they just don't sustain it. There was a very notable episode at the Big Ten tournament. I love to tell this story. Like we talked to Brad Underwood after the selections were posted and they were put up as a three seed. And I asked him because they gave up 50 plus points. I don't remember the exact number, 50 plus though, to Nebraska in the first half of the Big Ten semifinals. And And so he quite obviously, as we say in the sports world, peeled the paint during the halftime. I mean, and he acknowledged it, but everybody heard it. Like, everybody who was back there heard it. He really gave it to them. And then they came out at the start of the second half, and nothing had changed. The first 90 seconds or so were pretty much as the first 20 minutes had been. And so he called a timeout again. And this time I watched him because our set was right by their bench. And so I'm watching him, and he is sitting in his chair as the guys get into their little stools in that semicircle thing. And he didn't say a word. And it's like going, like the thing has, everybody's been sitting there now for 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds. I don't know exactly what the number was. I didn't put a stopwatch on it. But it had to be in between 30 and 45 seconds of the timeout. He just sat there and stared at them. And so we asked him about it the next day, and he said that sometimes it's what you don't say. And he said that after he had gotten them all together and didn't say anything and just kind of stared at them, that they started to talk amongst each other and realized that they needed to hold each other accountable to defend the way they're capable of defending. And everything flipped from then. I think Nebraska scored like 28 points the rest of the game, something like that. I mean, it completely changed. So I'll be very interested to see how committed they are from the jump. Because at this point, I mean, where you are now, I don't think Illinois can win this thing. I don't think Iowa State can win this thing, but I think either of them could make the Final Four. I mean, it's going to be difficult because they're in the most difficult circumstance. They are having to play UConn if they win. But I think that both of them have significant ability, and I think that they can believe that they can make the Final Four.
Who do you think wins this game tonight?
I picked Illinois. I think that, you know, when it's between offense and defense in this sport, especially when I do believe that Illinois is capable of defending, unlike Kentucky, which was a very poor college defense this year and really never had very many great moments defensively. As I said, I think Illinois still has the capacity to be significant defensively. I don't know that they're ever going to be elite, but I think in moments they can be. I like the way they're constructed. There are things that they have that are going to be difficult for Iowa State to take away. But I really think Iowa State's team is terrific and certainly has a great chance.
Okay, so I'm going to do the part where Steven likes it when I get you mad at me or push back a little bit. So, you know, we'll have some fun here. And I'll take up the – usually I'm antagonizing the Iowa State fans, but I'm going to take up for him here for a second.
Wow.
Because you said you think that both Illinois and Iowa State are good enough to make the Final Four but not to win at all. But as you said, if they're good enough to make the Final Four, that means they're good enough to beat UConn.
Yeah.
If you can beat UConn, why can't you win at all?
You can't. It's just different. I'm telling you guys, you have to have everything, and you can pull an upset. Somebody out there could pull an upset. It could be one of them. It could be tonight. You can pull an upset, but you have to win six to win this trophy. They don't give you the trophy for pulling the upset of the number one team. If they did, it would be different. But if you get to that last hurdle, those last two hurdles, and it's different. And you go back over the last 30 years, 35 years, and you just don't find exceptions. With the exception of UConn in 2014, you just don't find exceptions. Everybody has everything. That's the way it works. There aren't very many teams in this field that I believe have all the components necessary to win the national championship. I think that UConn certainly is one of them. I think two of them will play in Detroit tomorrow night, Tennessee versus Creighton. I think they both can win it. Purdue can win it. But not everybody can. Carolina can.
I know we're limited on time. I want to get to tomorrow night, so I'm going to ask you about the rest of the games this way tonight. Clemson, Arizona, San Diego State, UConn, Alabama, North Carolina. What will be the best game? What will be the most competitive game of those three tonight?
Well, you know, I think the most entertaining game will be Alabama-Carolina because they're not really, you know, they like to go. Both teams really like to go. And I do think Carolina is a much, 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 much better defensive team than Alabama. Alabama is much like Kentucky in that they don't really have the capacity to defend well. They're not built for it. They have to go past you. That's the way it works for them. And so most teams that play against them are happy to engage in that sort of game because it's fun. And it's also hard to stop Alabama, so you kind of find yourself having to get into a game like that, that you have to go out and outscore them because it's hard to slow them down. And so I think Carolina will win, but I do think that that's a game that anybody who watches will be glad they did.
And let me tell you, you hit the nail on the head. Because the other game I can't wait to watch is the late game tomorrow between Creighton and Tennessee. In my bracket, I picked UConn to play Purdue in the national championship game, but the two teams I'm rooting for the most, Iowa State and Creighton. And I love to watch Creighton play. And Creighton, Tennessee, I think is going to be fabulous. So if you would, break that game down for us. What do you expect from Creighton, Tennessee, and who do you think wins?
Yeah, Tennessee is the team I picked to play in the national championship game against UConn. And I've been disappointed in the way Tennessee's offense has devolved over the last 2 weeks or so, 2.5 weeks, really pretty much since they played Kentucky. They had gotten to a point where they had become really proficient on offense, and some of it was because Dalton Knecht was playing so well. And I think they became a little bit over-reliant on him going on heaters, and that's not really the way they should be operating. It should be... His heaters are a product of the rest of the offense, and not everybody stands around and waits for Dalton to go hit 7 threes. And that's kind of what they've gotten to now. I think that the way you beat Creighton is that you go through Kalkbrenner. I believe that's the way you beat them. You drive the basketball at him. You throw into the post at him. I think he's a terrific defender, but he's much better as a help defender than he is as a direct defender. I see when teams get leverage on him, he doesn't want to foul, which is understandable because he needs to be out there. So you can get buckets against him. And I think once you get that going, then the perimeter can open up a little bit. That's what I think Tennessee needs to do. Whether they'll get there, I don't know. Because they just, like I said, offensively, they have really lost their way over the last 2.5 weeks of the season. So that's a problem. But Creighton needs to be hot. They are really reliant on the 3-point shot. They have other ways to score, but not many. I mean, if the shots aren't dropping, it's not. It is problematic. But the thing about them is that they have so many guys that can make one. I mean, Trey Alexander can make a shot, and then you have guys that can make shots like Trey, and then you have shooters like Stephen Ashworth and Baylor Shireman and Mason Miller. Those guys are shooters. There's a difference between a guy who can make a shot and a shooter, and they have a little bit of one and a lot of the other. And I love their team. I think that they're terrific, and I really do believe that whoever gets out of that game has a great shot to win it all. It's going to be hard because you have to then beat Purdue, and then you have to win a semi, and it's not easy for anybody. But I think they have a shot.
So, Mike, I jotted down the names that you rattled off, and I realized you were kind of going off the top of your head, so maybe there's more you would add to it. But I did not hear you mention Arizona or Houston. I felt good because I got Tennessee in my Final Four with UConn. I have Arizona and Houston as well. Are either of those teams, do they have it all? Do they have enough to be national title winners?
I don't believe that Houston does, for sure. If you look at the way they're built, first of all, somewhat – lean on NBA level talent, which is really important. I also don't like the fact that this is no offense to either player, but I don't like the fact that their offense is so driven by small guards. I just can't find a team that's won it that, I mean, unless I want to go back to like 65 or something or 64, I can't find teams that win it built the way they're built. It's usually hard to get championship level offense from two guys that are 6'1", 6'. It's just, I mean, it's not common. And they don't have, you know, they don't have a great low post game. They've got a couple of wings that can make shots, but I think offensively they're just a little bit off the game relative to winning it all. And Arizona.
Hey, real quick, Mike, what about those Villanova teams under Jay Wright? That's just in my mind. They were smaller teams, weren't they?
No, I mean, Dante DiVincenzo, 6'5", 6'6", Miles Bridges, 6'9", Jason Hart was 6'7", 6'8". I mean, they had even Archie Diacono was 6'4", playing with Jalen Brunson, who's a little bit smaller. So they weren't small teams. I mean, they did not have, they did not play a lot through the post. Uche Echefu was 6'11", but not a great low post player. He was more of a great low post defender. But they were not small teams in that regard, and they weren't small in the backcourt either. Okay. So it is a little bit, it's just a different deal. And maybe it turns out that way. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they have got enough. I just don't know as well whether any of their guys are NBA first round pick type guys. And excuse me, I'm not sure if they've got that on their roster. Maybe it develops over time.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left, so I'll ask you about this one final game. Gonzaga-Purdue, we saw Gonzaga eliminate Kansas. Purdue has looked terrific. How will this game play out, you think?
Well, they played in Maui, and obviously Gonzaga was not playing as well at that point as they are now. Purdue has gotten better as well. For me, a lot of it is how does Gonzaga slow down Edie, who has really gotten on a roll, who's getting a fair whistle, which means that when people are fouling him because they don't seem to feel they have any other choice, they're getting called, which didn't happen in the last two tournaments. I still look at every game he plays as he's got to get a fair whistle because you can't just foul him because he's bigger than you. That's not how it should work. If you foul him, you should be called. And that's what happened in the Utah State game, and they were out of it pretty quickly. Gonzaga is a much better team than Utah State, but Utah State's pretty good, and Purdue handled them very easily. I think the other key for Purdue is the continued ascent of Fletcher Lawyer, who has been fantastic over the last 3-4 weeks. They need him to continue to A, make shots, or B, at least believe he can make the shots. Because when they struggle is when he stops believing in himself. And if you pass up shots as a perimeter player around Edie, all that does is convince defenses to throw more bodies at Edie. And the more bodies he's got in his area, the tougher it is for him to operate.
Mike DeCourcy, thank you so much for the time, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
It's opening day. It's a Sweet 16. What a day for a sports fan like Nate Bucati. He loves it.
Love it.
Absolutely. We'll take a break back after this on WHB.